Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
You are listening to NPR News. I'm Mike Edgerly, in today for Carrie Miller. And in coming to you in just a few moments, we will learn whether anyone has been charged in the opioid overdose of Prince. Carver County Prosecutor Mark Metz is scheduled to meet reporters in just a few moments to reveal what a two-year-long investigation has found. We don't know what Mr. Metz will announce or how much he will actually add to the story of Prince's death. A press release sent out from the county prosecutor's office yesterday said he would not be taking any questions. But we have learned this morning a little bit more detail. A Minnesota doctor accused of illegally prescribing an opioid for Prince a week before the musician died has agreed to pay $30,000 to settle a federal civil claim. Actually, the prescription was written to someone who was in Prince's circle for the drugs. No one has been charged, of course, but we do know the doctor's name who has been involved in the civil settlement this morning. So let's go live now to Carver County and Prosecutor Mark Metz.
Good morning. My name is Mark Metz, and I'm the Carver County Attorney. Also present are Peter Ivey, Chief Deputy County Attorney, Sheriff Jim Olson, and Chief Deputy Sheriff Jason Kamrud. Today, I announce my decision on whether the Carver County Attorney's Office will file criminal charges related to the death of Prince Rogers Nelson. The Carver County Sheriff's Office completed their investigation and submitted their reports to my office. This investigation was a coordinated and comprehensive one among several federal, state, and local agencies. I want to thank the United States Attorney Greg Brooker and the United States Attorney's Office and the various federal, state, and local agencies. They have been tremendous partners throughout. I also want to recognize Sheriff Jim Olson and the Carver County officers for their professionalism, competence, and tireless pursuit of the facts. Before announcing my decision, I must talk about my fundamental role as a prosecutor. As the Carver County Attorney, I only have jurisdiction to file criminal charges that occur in Carver County. My primary ethical duty as the Carver County Attorney is to seek justice within the bounds of the law.
And we've lost our connection to the Carver County news conference. We'll be bringing that back in just a few minutes. We were listening to Mark Metz, the Carver County prosecutor, who was saying that, in fact, he can only bring charges for crimes that are committed in Carver County. Here he is again.
Criminal charges under appropriate circumstances. Therefore, I seek to protect the innocent and convict the guilty, consider the interests of the victims and the witnesses, and respect the constitutional and legal rights of all persons, including suspects and defendants. I am mindful that this is a most unusual and extraordinary case involving a world-famous celebrity, but I cannot factor Prince's celebrity status and tremendous fame into the charging decision. The charging decision must be based on the legal merits and actual evidence adduced, not any particular bias in favor or disfavor of a particular celebrity or public figure. In considering a criminal charge, I must have evidence demonstrating probable cause that a certain crime was committed and there is a reasonable likelihood of conviction based on admissible evidence sufficient to prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. Proof beyond a reasonable doubt is the highest burden in American law. For the past 2 years, law enforcement from the Carver County Sheriff's Office, the federal and state agencies have conducted an extensive, painstaking, and thorough investigation into Prince's death. Their investigation has been extraordinary. The investigation has determined the following. On April 21, 2016, Prince died from an overdose of fentanyl. Fentanyl is a very powerful synthetic opioid that is 30 to 50 times more potent than heroin and 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. The evidence demonstrates that Prince thought he was taking Vicodin and not fentanyl. Vicodin is an opioid painkiller containing hydrocodone and acetaminophen. Vicodin is used to manage severe pain. The evidence reveals that Prince had experienced significant pain for a number of years and had been taking pain medication for a number of years. The evidence taken from Paisley Park revealed a large number of pill bottles containing different medications and pills. A significant number of the pills found by law enforcement at Paisley Park were not in the original container provided by a pharmacy. For example, law enforcement located numerous white capsule pills with Watson 853 imprinted on the pills inside Paisley Park. Like Vicodin, Watson 853 is a legitimate preparation made by Watson Pharmaceuticals containing hydrocodone and acetaminophen. A number of different pharmaceutical companies make pills containing hydrocodone and acetaminophen. Many consumers refer generically to such pills as Vicodin. Notably, the evidence demonstrates that Prince had no known Vicodin or fentanyl prescription. 15 of the prescription pills that had the Watson 853 imprint on it were located in Prince's dressing room. Another 64 and a half of these pills were located inside a Bayer bottle, and 20 and a half pills were located inside an Aleve bottle on the nightstand next to Prince's bed. Another loose pill was located in Prince's bed. Prince did not die from a Vicodin or Percocet overdose. The toxicology report is clear that Prince died from an overdose of fentanyl. The evidence suggests that Prince took counterfeit Vicodin containing fentanyl on or about April 21, 2016. Unfortunately, the subject counterfeit Vicodin pills are an exact imitation of real Vicodin pills, but the counterfeit pills contain the potentially deadly opioid fentanyl. Representative samples taken from Paisley Park of the counterfeit Vicodin pills tested positive for fentanyl. Nothing in the evidence suggests that Prince knowingly ingested fentanyl. In addition, there is no evidence that any person associated with Prince knew Prince possessed any counterfeit pills containing fentanyl. In all likelihood, Prince had no idea he was taking a counterfeit pill that could kill him. Others around Prince also likely did not know that the pills were counterfeit containing fentanyl. There is no evidence that the pill or pills that actually killed Prince were prescribed by a doctor. There is also no evidence to suggest any other sinister motive, intent, or conspiracy to murder Prince. The evidence suggests that Prince had long suffered significant pain, became addicted to pain medications, but took efforts to protect his privacy. In fact, Prince did not even own a cell phone, and so that was one important piece of evidence that law enforcement was not able to examine. The investigation also revealed on April 7, 2016, Dr. Michael Schulenberg treated Prince at North Memorial Clinic in Minnetonka. Prince's assistant, Kirk Johnson, contacted Dr. Schulenberg and asked him if he'd be able to see Prince because Prince had been experiencing numbness and tingling in his hands and legs and had vomited the night before. Dr. Schulenberg conducted a physical exam of Prince and then provided Prince with IV fluids. Dr. Schulenberg gave Prince two prescriptions for non-controlled substances, vitamin D and another drug to treat nausea. The doctor offered to see Prince again and conduct blood work if it was necessary. Dr. Schulenberg admitted to law enforcement that he put the prescription in Kirk Johnson's name in order to protect Prince's privacy. On April 14, 2016, Kirk Johnson contacted Dr. Schulenburg and asked the doctor if he would prescribe pain medication for Prince because Prince's hip was bothering him. Dr. Schulenburg stated that he felt comfortable prescribing Prince pain medication for Percocet because he had examined Prince the week before. He prescribed 15 pills of Percocet. Dr. Schulenburg's medical notes indicate that the patient called and was leaving for Atlanta for a concert shortly and hurt his back lifting equipment. He was wondering if he could get something to treat the pain. Dr. Schulenburg put the one-time prescription of the first 15 Percocet pills in Kirk Johnson's name at the request of Kirk Johnson because Prince wanted to protect his privacy and he did not want any narcotics issued in his name. Police located 10 of the 15 Percocet pills inside Prince's suitcase at Paisley Park as a result of their search warrant. On the evening of April 14th, 2016, Prince became unconscious while flying back to Minneapolis from a concert in Atlanta. The plane had to make an emergency landing in Moline, Illinois. At the airport, emergency medical services administered 2 doses of Narcan to resuscitate Prince. Prince was taken to the hospital and released that same day. No pills were tested by chemical analysis in Moline, but the evidence suggests that it is likely that Prince took a counterfeit Vicodin pill or pills with the Watson 853 imprint on it that was in a Bayer bottle. On Monday, April 18, 2016, Kirk Johnson told Dr. Schulenburg that he, Kirk Johnson, was concerned about Prince's opiate use. On Wednesday, April 20th, 2016, Dr. Schulenburg examined Prince again and took a blood sample. Prince stated that he was feeling antsy and asked about opiate withdrawal symptoms. Dr. Schulenburg administered IV fluids and provided a prescription for clonidine, a blood pressure medication that has been used to treat opiate withdrawal symptoms, and also a prescription for an antihistamine similar to Benadryl. That evening, Dr. Schulenburg spoke with Prince's management about arranging chemical dependency treatment for Prince. Prince's management then contacted a recovery center in California to assist Prince with his addiction. A representative from Recovery Without Walls in California traveled to Minnesota on April 21, 2016 to meet with Prince and management in order to get him help. On Thursday morning, April 21, 2016, Dr. Schulenburg communicated to Kirk Johnson that he had Prince's medical records and blood test results. Dr. Schulenburg agreed to meet Kirk Johnson at Paisley Park to drop off the test results. When Dr. Schulenburg arrived, rescue units were on scene. I repeat that Prince did not die from taking the prescribed Percocet, since Percocet contains oxycodone and not fentanyl. The evidence that Dr. Schulenburg prescribed Percocet for Prince in Kirk Johnson's name is not germane to the ultimate question I reviewed, which is who provided the counterfeit Vicodin with fentanyl to Prince. Despite the intensive law enforcement investigation, there is no reliable evidence showing how Prince obtained the counterfeit Vicodin laced with fentanyl or who else may have had a role in delivering the counterfeit Vicodin to Prince. As part of the investigation, law enforcement completed forensic analysis on all digital evidence seized pursuant to search warrants. Despite their extensive efforts, law enforcement was unable to determine the source of the counterfeit Vicodin laced with fentanyl. Therefore, without probable cause and no identified suspect, the Carver County Attorney's Office cannot file any criminal charges involving the death of Prince. The fact that criminal charges are not brought certainly does not mean that some person or persons associated with Prince did not assist or enable Prince in obtaining the counterfeit Vicodin. After all, Prince somehow did come into possession of the pills, and the pills had to come from some source. There is no doubt that the actions of individuals around Prince will be criticized, questioned, and judged in the days and weeks to come. But suspicions and innuendo are categorically insufficient to support any criminal charges. Assigning blame by implication is not my role as the Carver County Attorney and as a prosecutor. My role is to make exacting legal determinations based on established and reliable facts, not to pass moral judgments. To ethically charge anybody with any crime requires probable cause plus a reasonable likelihood of conviction, noting that the threshold of proof in a criminal case is beyond a reasonable doubt to a unanimous jury. The bottom line is that we simply do not have sufficient evidence to charge anyone with a crime related to Prince's death. Because Prince was an intensely private person, he was certainly assisted and enabled by others to obtain some of these medications. Those individuals included, but are not limited to Dr. Schulenburg and Kirk Johnson. The evidence shows that they followed Prince's direction in maintaining his privacy. However, we have no direct evidence that a specific person provided the fentanyl to Prince. For every legal wrong, there is a remedy, but not every remedy is criminal in nature. Therefore, I am pleased to announce that the United States Attorney's Office for the District of Minnesota just issued a press release announcing a civil settlement with Dr. Schulenburg. We are pleased that the doctor is being held accountable for his actions in writing the prescription Percocet in Kirk Johnson's name. Because I am declining to file criminal charges, the law enforcement reports prepared by the Carver County Sheriff's Office now become public data under Minnesota law. These materials will be available for free download on the Carver County Sheriff's website in the next day or two. Individual data requests are therefore not required. While some portions of the law enforcement data may be redacted consistent with the law, the vast majority of the reports and photos are not redacted. Under Minnesota law, all data is presumed public unless some exception applies. Our state has a very open and transparent process as it relates to data, even criminal investigative reports and photos of crime scenes. This office must comply with the law, and therefore the reports and photos are public at this stage since no charges are being filed. In regards to the autopsy reports, Minnesota law is very specific about data that a medical examiner is allowed to disclose. The law provides that the autopsy reports, which includes the toxicology reports, are considered private or non-public data under Minnesota law and therefore are not accessible to the public. I would like to conclude by stating that we are in the middle of an unprecedented and horrific epidemic of opioid overdoses in this country. Prince's death is a tragic example that opioid addiction and overdose deaths do not discriminate, no matter the demographic. We wish to express our sincere condolences to the family, friends, and vast legion of Prince's fans. Thank you.
You have been listening to Mark Metz, the Carver County attorney, who announced just moments ago there will be no criminal charges brought in responsibility for the death of Prince nearly a year ago from an overdose of an opioid known as fentanyl. You're listening to NPR News. I'm Mike Edgerly, coming to you live this morning, sitting in for Carrie Miller. We're going to take a look at this decision with a couple of authorities, both one a prosecutor and one a medical addiction specialist. Susan Gartner is with us. She's a former Ramsey County attorney and now a principal attorney at Minneapolis law firm of Gray, Plant & Moody. Ms. Gartner, thanks for joining us this morning.
You're welcome, Mike, and I just want to make sure that it's clear to your audience that I am a former prosecutor.
I hope I said that. Sorry if I left that out. You are a former prosecutor. And we're also joined by Dr. Charles Reznikoff, currently an addiction specialist based at Hennepin County Medical Center. He's an authority on opioid addiction. Dr. Reznikoff, thank you for taking time.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Ms. Gartner and Dr. Reznikoff, I'd like to start first, by getting your reaction to this. This is the intersection of an epidemic, the intersection being medicine and law. Ms. Gartner, are you surprised that there were no charges brought in the case of Prince's death?
Well, I'm not either surprised or unsurprised, because so much of the information that the prosecutor outlined was not necessarily available to the public appropriately while the investigation was ongoing. As he laid out, though, what they learned throughout that investigation, it was pretty clear well before he stated his conclusion that there would be no charges, it was pretty clear there weren't going to be, for the reason that he was very specific about the fact that there was not evidence pointing to who was the source of the fentanyl, who had provided the fentanyl, and without that, there could be no charges. I think that this case is a classic example of why the job that Mr. Metz holds as chief prosecutor is such a difficult one. I think that lots and lots of people would have liked to have seen someone held criminally responsible for the tragic death of a very beloved figure. But you can't charge people with crimes unless you have proof beyond a reasonable doubt of who did it and what they did. And that was obviously lacking here.
Right. You could tell from his voice that Mr. Metz was having, you know, he was under some stress. He's aware, as you say, Ms. Gertner, that there is pressure to find someone responsible. But Dr. Reznikoff, in what I thought was a pretty interesting description of the case and the days leading up to Prince's death, Mr. Metz, the prosecutor, in announcing there would be no charges, criminal charges, did seem to describe something that may be familiar to you as an addiction expert, that someone is getting pills that may be bought from the street or from a non-medical person, and they are buying something like Vicodin, but in fact they're getting something that's far more powerful, in this case, fentanyl. Am I getting that right? Does this resonate with you as something that you've seen?
Yeah, this is a very important message. Two points in this are not unique to Prince. Regardless of his status and his importance, the pattern of starting in pain and then over time developing addiction and seeking more and more opioids, going to different doctors, being shameful of seeking help for your addiction, that is common. But more importantly, to your point, any pharmaceutical, anything you think is a pharmaceutical, anything you think is a drug, is now commonly adulterated with fentanyl. And the people who are doing these, making these ersatz pills, don't know how to put the correct amount of fentanyl in the pill. They create an ersatz Vicodin in their basement or in some laboratory, but they accidentally put too much fentanyl in that ersatz pill. So anything you obtain from illicit channels is suspect. And everyone should understand, even borrowing a pill from a friend, getting a pill on the street, whatever they say it is, whatever it looks like, it could be fentanyl, and that is highly dangerous.
Right. This is an incredible tragedy, but as Mr. Metz, the prosecutor, pointed out, that it's all too familiar, isn't it? Ms. Gartner, I, when you were prosecuting in Ramsey County, were you seeing cases like this coming across your desk at that time?
Well, I've seen throughout my previous 26 years as a prosecutor trends in terms of what the current most prevalent, most dangerous drugs are. The opiate crisis is more recent than my experience in the prosecutor's office, but certainly something I've followed. And I think one of the aspects of the opiate crisis that is so important to pay attention to is it can start so innocently. It can start with very legal substances obtained through authorized methods, and from there, due to possible overprescription or susceptibility to addiction or whatever, it spirals into a situation where it is no longer legal drugs, it is no longer lawfully prescribed, and it turns into really a death grip of addiction.
And at this point, we may never know who provided Prince the fentanyl, is there, or the ersatz Vicodin, I guess, as described by the prosecutor, Mr. Metz. Is that right?
I think that is very fair to say that if this information didn't come out in the 2 years that this was intensely investigated, it's unlikely to come out in the future. But the one benefit, if you will, of this intense interest in this particular case is it raises this issue I mean, there's been a lot of circumstances where people are talking about opiate addiction. It's being confronted across the board by all kinds of law enforcement agencies, public health agencies, that really everyone, kind of all hands on deck in terms of the opiate crisis. So this is another example of why this is, how this is being brought to the public's attention, and everybody needs to pay attention to it and help in stemming this crisis.
If you're just joining us, we are reporting this morning on the decision by the Carver County Prosecutor Mark Metz to not bring any criminal charges in the death of Prince nearly 2 years ago for his overdose death. He was found at Paisley Park, April 21st, 2016. The prosecutor said there is no evidence of an attempt to murder or to otherwise harm Prince. It was a matter of how he was managing his pain, his what appears to be an addiction. Dr. Reznikoff, Mr. Metz pointed out that there were numerous pills found in Prince's possession after his death through search warrants. Is that common to find that they're just pills scattered everywhere? And as he pointed out, they were even in bottles that weren't even marked prescription medicines.
Yeah, yes, that's common to have. I don't myself know that Prince had an opioid addiction, so I want to be careful with that. But for if one has an opioid addiction, they cannot go a day without opioids, without severe pain and withdrawal. So almost by definition, they will have a stockpile hidden somewhere. And if and as that backup is running low, they'll get more and more anxious, because when they run out, they know they're in trouble. So having many pills squirreled away around the house is common for opioid addiction. Again, I can't say that Prince has an addiction. I think there's many suggestive pieces of evidence there, but I have never met him myself.
Right, right. But he did, it appears, suffer from pretty intense pain and had so for some years.
Right, right. I wanted to comment that there is both the immediate cause of his death and whether that should be prosecuted, and then there's the more sort of ultimate cause of his death, the things that had been in our delivery of medicine, in our society, that had led to him dying, and that includes a misunderstanding of opioids that happened 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and we're just trying to correct today. That includes overprescribing of opioids. That includes reassuring patients that this is safe and that nothing could happen from this opioid, whereas now we know up to 10% or more patients on daily opioids get addicted to them. And if a patient has a mental health issue, such as childhood trauma or even depression, that percentage may be much higher, 25 or 30%. So we wrongly gave these opioids out and assured patients that it was safe. And that is sort of an ultimate cause of Prince's death, that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, he may have been started on these medicine and given false reassurance.
Right. If you're just joining us, we're reporting this morning that the Carver County prosecutor is not bringing criminal charges in the death of Prince. There has been a word this morning of a civil settlement involving a Dr. Michael Todd Schulenberg for violation of the Controlled Substances Act when he wrote a prescription in someone else's name, Kirk Johnson, who was in Prince's inner circle. That is not a criminal charge. That is a civil account. It has been settled. And as Mark Metz pointed out this morning, there is no culpability by Dr. Schulenberg in the decision, in the investigation this morning. We have just a few minutes left, both of you. Ms. Gartner, any lessons from this, both as a citizen and a fan of Prince and a former prosecutor?
Well, I think that the doctor moments ago described an important piece of this, and that is education about opioids, and we're all learning, and certainly the medical community is learning about some of the past mistakes and how the ultimate effect of over-prescribing, lack of knowledge of patients as to the risk of taking opioids. I think that that's all out there now in the public view. I think that the civil settlement with Dr. Schulenburg, where he is held accountable for mistakes that were made. Not criminal, again, but certainly it is not a good idea to give prescriptions out in other people's names. And so that tool of the justice system was used to try to correct that kind of behavior. And again, because this is all so public, everyone can learn from it. And that's the most important piece.
Dr. Reznikoff, we'll leave you with the final word. We have about a minute left. Is there something that will be made of this in a positive way, Prince's death, the outcome, what we've learned about it?
I hope so. I think looking at Dr. Schulenburg's actions, while not criminal, what would I hope that I would have done, or what would I have advised him to do? He could have given Prince a naloxone antidote kit. That is legal in the state. It may have saved his life. He referred Prince to addiction treatment, and that included, if I'm not mistaken, buprenorphine, a medication. That was a good move. I'm glad that happened. And he might not wanted to have given opioids for that back pain on the first occasion. He might want to have taken that as an opportunity to intervene sooner. So I'm hoping we do those sorts of things in the future.
Dr. Reznikoff, thank you. And Susan Gartner, thank you for joining us this morning. You're listening to NPR News. Again, no criminal charges in the death of Prince. This is NPR News.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Kerri at @KERRINPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.